Okay, try to picture this. It's 1958. You're out in the middle of the Nevada desert. It's vast, it's empty, incredibly quiet.
Almost unnervingly quiet.
Exactly. Total darkness, maybe just this faint, low hum in the air. You know, the kind that tells you something big, something secret is happening nearby, hidden away.
Underground, maybe.
You can almost feel that desert cold. And then suddenly, this crackle, a voice comes over, some kind of recording. It's from a declassified audio log.
Ah, the Site 13 log.
That's the one. Site 13, the timestamp says 23:47. So late at night, some forgotten date in 1958. And the operation name, Operation Blossom.
Blossom.
Yeah.
Quite the euphemism, given what it
No
involves.
kidding.
Oh.
The voice on the tape, it's very clinical, describing three subjects. First, Emily, just says, inhuman strength.
Just like that. Stark.
Then Rose, machine telepathy. Apparently she could control machines just by thinking about it.
Imagine the implications of that power.
Right. And finally, June, her ability, cognitive override, basically mind control. But the log notes, it was so powerful, so subtle, that the scientists themselves completely underestimated it.
A dangerous oversight.
Hugely dangerous. And to keep these powers contained, the girls wore collars. The log calls them 400-volt deterrents.
Basically, shock collars designed to suppress their abilities. Grim stuff.
Really grim. The log then describes this turning point. And it wasn't like a big fight or anything obvious. It was June.
The one with the underestimated power.
Exactly. She quietly, somehow, influenced the lead scientist. Dr. Clyde Peep is his name, though the log calls him Dr. Harlow here.
Right. Peep was the lead researcher.
And she made him leave the remote control for their collars unsecured. He apparently didn't even realize he hadn't done it deliberately. Thought it was his own lapse.
That's the insidious nature of her power right there. Undetectable influence.
Then there's chaos. The recording suddenly captures this massive power surge. Everything goes haywire. Security cameras start looping the same footage.
Covering their tracks technologically. Smart. That would be Rose, presumably.
It must be. And then this detail that just gives you chills. Doors melting outward.
Melting outward. That sounds like immense force or heat. Emily's strength, perhaps, unleashed.
Or something else entirely. And right after that, the feed just cuts dead. Static.
Silence.
The log picks up the next morning, and the description is stark. Just scorch marks, nothing else. No bodies, no debris of note, no trace of the girls.
Vanished.
Completely. The file was officially closed, outcome listed as unresolved. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're digging into that chilling audio log and the other declassified bits and pieces about this Nevada's Forgotten Powerpuff Project, as some have called it.
Catchy name, but the reality seems much darker.
Much darker. Our mission today is to pull out the key nuggets from these sources.
Mm-hmm.
What was Operation Blossom? Who were these girls? And what really happened in that desert? We want to connect it back to you, the listener, and why this buried story still matters.
And it's crucial to frame this correctly, I think. This isn't just some spooky story. What the sources suggest is a real window into, let's say, ethically fraught government experiments, trying to create human weapons.
Right, and the kind of explosive, unforeseen consequences that can happen when you push those kinds of boundaries.
Precisely. When scientific ambition perhaps outpaces ethical consideration.
Okay, so that audio log gives us the dramatic endpoint. But let's back up. How does a project like Operation Blossom even get started in 1958?
Yeah.
Creating people with these almost comic book powers. What do the sources say?
Well, the context is key, right? 1958, deep Cold War. There's this intense pressure, this race for any kind of advantage, technological, military, biological.
Right, need to get an edge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Operation Blossom, according to the files, was initiated then, set up in this extremely remote lab in Nevada, purpose-built for secrecy.
Makes sense. And the driving force.
Dr. Clyde Peep. The documents describe him as brilliant, definitely, but also highly eccentric, maybe obsessed. And his objective, the program's objective, it was, well, audacious is one word for it, to create human weapons through DNA modification.
DNA modification.
Yeah.
In the 50s. That sounds way ahead of its time.
It really does. We were still figuring out the double helix, but the ambition was there, clearly driven by military aims, trying to engineer soldiers from the genetic level up. It's quite startling to see documented evidence of that kind of thinking so early on.
Absolutely startling. And these experiments, they actually worked. They produced these three girls, the real-life Powerpuff girls, though, yeah, way scarier. Let's look at Emily again. Superhuman strength.
Mm-hmm.
Do the files give any more detail on, like, how strong?
They do. It wasn't just strong like a weightlifter. The descriptions are more biblical, almost. Notes mention her being able to casually reshape reinforced concrete structures, bend thick steel beams.
Seriously.
Seriously. The implication is they were trying to create something that could just pulverize fortifications, a living demolition machine.
Wow. Okay. Then Rose, machine telepathy. Controlling machines with her mind. How on earth did they test that, and what was the idea there, militarily?
The testing protocols describe sound complex. Setting up interfaces, having her interact with isolated computer systems, machinery. It suggests she could, you know, remotely access and control electronic systems, not just flicking switches, but potentially disabling enemy radar, hijacking communications, maybe even turning a facility's own systems against itself.
So, like, a master saboteur, but without ever touching anything.
Exactly. A strategic weapon capable of causing massive disruption remotely, which, of course, also made her incredibly dangerous within the lab, hence the intense containment efforts.
Yeah, you'd think. And then there's June. Cognitive override.
Yeah.
Mind control. The files say the scientists underestimated its reach. How could they get that so wrong? What did her power actually do?
Well, cognitive override, as described, wasn't just about suggestion. It seems it was about fundamentally altering perception and decision-making, planting ideas so subtly the target believes they're their own, maybe even editing recent memories.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the underestimation, I think it points to a classic kind of hubris, maybe. They were so focused on the creation, the bioengineering, they didn't fully grasp the implications of the consciousness they were altering. They assumed they could control their creation.
Especially a power like that, which works on the controllers themselves.
Precisely. It's the ultimate blind spot, believing you're immune to the very thing you've engineered.
And that underestimation, combined with how they were treated, it set the stage for disaster. The sources are pretty blunt about their lives there. Experiments grew increasingly dark.
It paints a bleak picture. Constant rigorous testing, isolation, probably endless training drills.
And the source says explicitly they were treated like tools, not children. Which, I mean, they were children genetically altered or not.
That dehumanization is critical. Viewing them purely as assets, as instruments, that kind of environment breeds resentment, desperation. It almost guarantees a reaction eventually. The psychological pressure must have been enormous. And the primary tool for control were those collars, the 400-volt deterrents, the ultimate physical failsafe. But how did they get past them? If they suppress their powers.
But they suppress the manifestation of powers like strength or machine control. June's power wasn't like that. It didn't need a physical action.
It operated purely on the mental plane.
Exactly. The collars were designed to stop Emily from smashing things or Rose from interfacing with tech. They probably weren't designed, perhaps couldn't be designed, to stop a subtle thought whispered into the right mind.
Which leads us back to June's plan. It was brilliant in a terrifying way. The source says she secretly used her mind control power on Dr. Peep during an experiment.
Not a direct confrontation.
Subversion.
Total subversion. Made him think leaving the collar remote under the table was just an accident. His own carelessness.
That detail is key. It wasn't do this. It was making him think he had done it, or rather, failed to do something else.
Yeah.
It speaks to the depth of her control and, frankly, the arrogance of Peep and his team. They couldn't imagine their own thoughts were entirely their own. Believing they were always the ones in control.
Right up until the moment they weren't. Catastrophic oversight born from hubris.
So, Peep leaves the remote, and the source says simply, later that night, the girls retrieved the device and removed their collars. Just like that. Freedom.
And the immediate unleashing of everything those collars had held back.
Which brings us right back to the chaos in the audio log. The power surge, the looping cameras, the melting doors. It all clicks into place now. It was them, unleashed.
A coordinated escape using their unique abilities.
Emily, smashed through walls. That explains the doors melting outward. Maybe not melting, maybe just obliterated by sheer force. And the scorch marks later.
Raw power, tearing through structures designed to contain them. The facility likely wasn't built to withstand that level of focused destruction from the inside.
While Emily provided the muscle, Rose was the ghost in the machine. Disabled the lab alarms and locked the doors. That explains the looping cameras buying them time, creating confusion.
Very strategic. It wasn't just destruction, it was controlled chaos. Locking doors, disabling alarms that isolates the guards, prevents reinforcements, maximizes their window, shows real tactical thinking.
Which the scientists clearly didn't expect. And June. The source says she was calm and calculating, using her powers to paralyze the terrified guards.
Which explains the lack of reported resistance in the log, despite the obvious destruction. She neutralized the human threat without, perhaps, overt violence on her part. Just stopped them in their tracks, mentally.
It's terrifyingly effective. Yeah. Emily for demolition, Rose for tech control and misdirection, June for neutralizing personnel.
The synergy is remarkable. They weren't just three individuals with powers. They acted as a unit, each ability complementing the others perfectly for that escape. It was a force multiplier the project creators utterly failed to anticipate.
So the escape is successful, brutally so. The three fled into the desert, the source says, leaving a trail of destruction. Predictably, there was an intense manhunt.
You'd expect nothing less. Three incredibly powerful, potentially dangerous assets loose.
But they were never found. Just vanished into the night, into the desert.
Which is where the official story seemed to end. A failed experiment, subjects lost, file closed, case unresolved. But then, decades later.
Yeah, the declassified files hinted at more. These later documents mention alleged sightings.
Which is fascinating. It suggests the story didn't just end there in the desert in 58. The mystery continued, albeit completely off the official books.
And the nature of these sightings is so specific, it's almost bizarre. The files mention reports of three pregnant women near military installations.
Pregnant women, yeah. Plural, near military sites. Years later, that specific cluster of details is loaded. It implies not just survival, but potentially procreation, a legacy, and their continued proximity to sensitive areas. That raises a whole new set of questions.
It really does, and it makes the final note in the source material even more chilling. Their existence was erased from history.
That's a powerful statement. Not just lost or missing, but actively erased, scrubbed from the records. It makes you wonder what else gets deliberately forgotten or hidden. How much of accepted history is curated by omitting the uncomfortable, the inexplicable, the powerful?
Which brings us back to that core question from the source. But if the question remains, where are they now?
Exactly. It's fundamentally unresolved. You have these individuals with truly extraordinary abilities who escaped, evaded capture, were erased from the records, and then maybe, just maybe, reappeared decades later in this very specific, suggestive context.
It leaves you hanging, doesn't it? The sheer potential of what might have happened next.
It really does. What happens when that kind of power walks off the reservation and disappears into the world? What ripples does it create that we never see?
So, Operation Blossoms. An incredible, terrifying story. A government chasing the power to create human weapons. The unintended creation of something perhaps uncontrollable, and then this spectacular, violent disappearance into thin air.
It really is. But think about that unresolved thread, that final, provocative question. If these women, possessing these unique and potent abilities, did vanish, perhaps had children near places of power, what kind of hidden legacy might exist completely outside our known history? What does it mean when truths this potent can seemingly be wiped from the official narrative?
Something definitely to think about. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Nevada's forgotten secrets. We hope it gives you plenty to ponder.